welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. And after that long and cumbersome disclaimer, makes me feel like I should say something bad.
Watch what you say.
It just makes me want to kind of go off the rails or something. I don't know. It's got a provoking sort of quality to it anyway. I missed the short and sweet one. Maybe it's because I didn't listen to that one. Oh, my gosh. So, I'm Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff. And... Nice. That's real nice.
Bill told me not
Why does she treat me that way? It's horrible.
He told me not to mess up his, not to mess up his ad, so I didn't say anything.
That's what we were doing. Sponsor of this hour is Team Power, our local John Deere Kubota tractor dealer. They're up in Shasta Lake City at 3119 Twinview Boulevard. And anything tractors, they can take care of you up there. They're loaded with inventory right now. Go in there and get a great deal. And service, you can get your tractor worked on, get it tuned up. Take your mower in there and get the blade sharpened because the grass is growing like an inch a minute right now. So
I can hear it. I can hear it from here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we had the lawn guy come out Friday, and today it looks like it needs to be mowed again. I mean, it's that time of year. So go out and see him.
Yeah, cut it before it all dies.
Yeah,
before and then you light your neighborhood on fire.
Yeah. Phone number out there is 226-9226, Team Power. Now it's your turn to speak. I will allow it.
There's nothing like just not saying anything and looking at the other person. I used to love doing that to Elizabeth. It's been a long time since I've done that. And I won't do it again right away, otherwise it won't work.
Yeah, I'll give you the look.
Anyway, a lot going on out in the free world. So we have two guests for you today. So you've got two things to choose from. The first hour, we are chatting with Dan Johnson. We have not talked to Dan.
It's been like 3 years or...
December of 2013.
Oh, wow.
I know. I was like, well, we haven't talked to you for a couple of years. And I looked back in the archives. Yeah, December of 2013. So he's 24 now.
Yeah, he was a mere child.
What a difference time makes, huh?
Yeah.
So he has created an organization called We Do Better. And I don't know if then government is actually part of the title, but I put it in parentheses because obviously it makes sense and that's what they're doing. But Dan, who is 24, is the founder of three national nonprofit organizations. At 18, that's when we met him, he founded People Against the NDAA, or PANDA, which became one of the largest civil liberties organizations in America. Passed laws protecting the right to trial by jury in seven cities and countries. After PANDA, he founded the Solutions Institute, the first nonpartisan activist training center in the U.S. And together with his board of over 30 of the top activists in the U.S., he brought local, national, and international media attention to dozens of protests and rallies and helped over 70 organizations enact, defeat, and raise awareness about various public policies in their first year. So I put all the links and things on the website. It's wethepeopleradio.us. And I do hope you'll go there. There's a great video if you want to hear more from Dan. He did a great video with a guy who, Dan, what's the guy's name? The anarchy guy.
Jeff Berwick.
There you go. It doesn't. I'm just looking at the little YouTube clip, and it doesn't say who it is. But that was a great interview. I listened to it yesterday, so I got a little sneak preview on what you've been up to. But we are specifically talking to Dan today because on Tuesday there is something happening in hearing happening in Sacramento. So if you happen to live in California and you happen to be listening on May the 6th, just in case we replay this at a later time.
And you don't like giving money to the government.
Yeah, and you want your money to go someplace that will actually do some good, then you should get a pen and keep listening. All right, Dan, take it away. Tell us what We Do Better means or does. And is then government part of it?
Then government is the implied part of it.
Okay.
That's correct.
I wrote it on there in case people didn't figure that out. Spoiler alert.
Well, the We and We Do Better does stand for We the People. It does not stand for my organization, even though I love the team that we have here. And we do cut out the last part, then government, because, frankly, it's not necessary to to make the statement it's understood by all parties. And our number one target and our number one audience has been progressives and mainstream Democrats. So approaching them in the language they understand and they can work with, it starts with "we do better" and focus on the positive rather than on the negative. But that said, the best way to explain "we do better" is in Hurricane Harvey, that hurricane dropped about 2 trillion gallons of water on the Texas coast. The combined weight of the United States federal government through the Coast Guard, which had over 33 helicopters, many professional rescue teams, and millions and millions and millions of dollars in resources, was deployed to the hurricane about a day or two after it made landfall. And that combined force rescued about 4,500 people, according to their own numbers. And while that is obviously fantastic, and we should praise the Coast Guard for their efforts, a little ragtag group of guys with boats from Louisiana called the Louisiana Cajun Navy. They have walkie-talkies, GPS, and gas money. And they rescued 6,000 people during Hurricane Harvey.
Yeah, that really was an amazing effort. They got a little bit of press on that, but I don't think people really realized the scope of what they accomplished.
I don't think people do. I mean, when I was working with them, we had they had set up an online ticket system. Basically, what you'd do is they had several teams. I was on the social media team, and people would post on Twitter or on Facebook, "Hey, my family's drowning at such and such an address." And we would find them, and we would contact them, get a phone number, figure out where the water level was, and then put it in a ticket system, and then it would let the nearest boat that was to their area know, by the way, these people need to be picked up. And it really was the effort of tons of volunteers. But at the end of the day, the results speak for themselves. And this doesn't just happen. You talk about the media didn't cover it. The media doesn't cover very well at all when the people go out there and deliver public services or address human needs in their communities. You might get a little feel-good story of when, you know, the local scouts plant some trees. But when it comes to actual, you know, public services, another good one, and this is California specific, there is a nonprofit organization in San Diego, California, called Saved in America. It is an organization of former Navy SEALs, law enforcement, and private investigators. Their number one and only goal is to find missing children. Since 2014, they've found over 70 missing children. Their average time to find these children is within 9 days, and they only spend $5,000 to find each child on average. Whereas law enforcement hunts can go on for weeks and months sometimes, never finding the children.
Wow.
These are examples, and I could list off example after example, but long story short is this. The vast majority of human needs in this country are addressed by the people through informal groups, through nonprofits, through for-profits, etc. But the vast majority of resources for public services, i.e. tax dollars, that's going directly to the government. There's a problem with that imbalance, and that is a problem we've chosen to solve.
You know, and it's such a great idea, Dan, because I can't think of too many government agencies that, if privatized, the private sector would do such a better job. And I don't care if you're talking about filling potholes or feeding hungry people.
There's one pothole, like right where we park at church in the road. We're going to just name it because I don't think it's ever going away.
You ever step in that thing, you're going to break a leg. But no, it's true. It's amazing the waste and the bureaucracy that occurs when the government gets involved in anything. And I think you're a shining example of what can be done. We got to take a break and be back, and let's focus.
Let's
on
Let's talk
it.
More with Dan.
Yeah, let's.
Oh my
talk
God,
more
what
with
a great idea!
Hey, why don't we? As long as we got him on the phone.
Dan's our hostage for the next 45 minutes. In case you were wondering, you are listening to We the People. Join us online, WeThePeopleRadio.us.
you're dreaming about California. It don't matter at all where you play.
Me and all my friends, we're all misunderstood. They say we stand for nothing and there's no way we ever could. Now we see everything that's going wrong with the world and those who lead it. Just feel like we don't have the means to rise above and beat it. So we keep waiting, waiting, waiting on the world to change. We keep on waiting, waiting.
We're not going to wait anymore.
But unlike the song, Dan is not waiting.
No.
And it's kind of fun because a lot of people talk about the problem.
Right.
But they don't actually come up with ideas.
So if let's say you owed taxes, you know, just by chance, you owed some money to the government.
State government.
And you had a choice. Let's talk about that. Where could we get that money?
Talk about this charitable credit, Dan.
Well, sure. So first of all, I have to mention that this isn't necessarily my idea. We probably came up with it independently, but somebody beat me to it by about 20 years, which is a good thing.
Is that agent treachery overcomes youth and skill? Is that the deal?
Well, you know, some of the best companies out there just took somebody else's product and made it better. And
of
then
course.
Sold it.
That's true.
So anyway,
can't figure it out.
China's got a whole country operating like that. I digress.
Hey, I will get my my cheap Amazon goods shipped from China any day. So
his name's Dan anyway. Johnson. I'll post his phone number. They're going to come after you on Twitter, Dan. They're going to shame you.
Oh God, I'll be cast to supporting sweatshops within 3 hours.
Exactly.
So, So Arizona in 1997 during the welfare reform push. They were looking at, you know, should we institute work requirements? Should we cut welfare? Should we increase it? How should we reform welfare in this state? And the Beacon Hill Institute published an article about something called a compassion credit. And one of the representatives in Arizona thought that that was a fantastic idea and presented it to the legislature. And eventually, at the end of the year, the governor signed it into law. And what it did is it allowed Arizonans to take up to 200 of their state income tax dollars and direct it to any nonprofit organization that served the poor in Arizona. And only about 3,000 or so taxpayers took advantage of it in the first year. It wasn't very well publicized. It had several requirements, such as you had to take the credit and tell the government you were taking it by December instead of April. So anybody who files their taxes like a normal person didn't know about it till next year, and they immediately forgot about it afterward. Well, fast forward to 2016. 130,000 taxpayers took this credit, and they sent $52 million to over 800 nonprofit organizations in
wow.
the state of Arizona. And that credit worked so well that a bipartisan bill with both Republicans and Democrats passed at the end of 2016, doubling the credit from $200 per person to $400 per person, and we haven't even seen the numbers on that yet.
Hmm. Yeah, because you have to assume that anybody that contributed to 200 under the new plan would double it. You know, why not?
Yeah, absolutely.
And what are the restrictions on the organizations that can participate in that, or are there?
So in Arizona, the restrictions are the nonprofit has to spend at least half its revenue serving people who are 150% or less above the poverty line. We think that that's a restriction that was put there for political purposes because there's really no point at which someone, you know, they don't cross from 150 to 151
right.
and then go, all of a sudden, we're rich and now we can give away all of our money.
Yeah, or all of a sudden they're poor.
Or all of a sudden they're poor, right? Cross from 151 to 150. That restriction isn't necessarily something we support in our legislation in California. In our draft legislation, the universal charitable credit does not have that restriction. But even with that restriction, you have over 800 organizations, and you have, you know, $52 million going to them in just 1 year.
So people have lots of choices. It isn't just the, you know, faux government NGO guys that are swooping in and grabbing up all the money.
Well, and what's interesting is at first, the United Way, some bigger organizations that don't have the most efficiency and probably in many cases aren't the best charities to give to, at first they got most of the credit because they were the ones with the advertising budget. They're the ones going out and saying, hey, you should do this, et cetera. But as we got closer and closer to 2016, United Way fell from first to fourth to, I think, they're like seventh in the nonprofits people are donating to, because the more people realize this choice actually exists, and the more people that take that choice, the numbers show they're directing the money toward the best, the most efficient, the nonprofits that are actually making a difference in their community.
So is there how do they find the groups that are qualified?
Do they
have a list they can choose from, or do they have to go out and research that part themselves?
The Arizona Department of Revenue is required to every year update the list on their website. That is a list of nonprofits people can choose from.
Oh, nice. So you were thinking, why did you, besides the fact that we have a huge number of people living under the poverty line in California, but why did you guys choose to focus on California next?
Well, California was the state that embraced it the most, actually.
Really?
So basically, what we've done, what I've done in my past organizations, and what we really, really do with this one, at the end of the day, this is about empowering the people to do better. And it's up to the people of the state. We write the legislation. We say, hey, here's a suggestion. And then we let people in that state go, yeah, this is important enough. We want to contact our representatives and go do it. And this bill in California is no different. The Federation of California Republican Women got behind this, as well as several nonprofits and a couple Democratic voting groups. And they pressured Senator Mike Morrell into actually introducing it. He'd introduced a modified version of it in 2014, but we kind of put some pressure on him to introduce it this year, and he did. And we're looking at flooding the committee room of the Senate Governance and Finance Committee on May 9th at 10 a.m. I'll actually be flying out from Georgia to speak in favor of the bill, and we'll probably have several nonprofits there. We'll have probably a decent crowd, and anyone, of course, listening to the radio is welcome to join us. But the key here, I don't know if we'll be able to get it through committee and onto the floor this year in California, but we're going to pop enough signal flares that the politicians don't have the moral ground anymore. And when they lose the moral high ground, in a lot of ways, they're going to lose a lot of the progressive left. And that's what we found, and that's what our strategy is in California.
And so that would, if that did get to the floor, that would put it up for a vote on election date? I mean, is that something we have to vote on, or?
This is not a ballot initiative.
This is a bill.
This is a piece of legislation.
It's actually SB 1485 is the legislation, the California number. And what committee, again, Dan? I'm going to post that.
It's the State Senate Governance and Finance Committee, Room 112.
Okay. All right. I'm going to put that in here so that people can check. And that's May 9th around 10 a.m. You think about 10 a.m.?
Yeah, about 10 a.m. Obviously, they're government, so they could hold the hearing sometime between 10 and 2 o'clock in the morning. But we're looking at about 10 a.m.
Cool. I think that's awesome. And your biggest obstacle on this thus far, you had said, was one of the guys over on the coast.
Absolutely. State Senator Mike McGuire.
So he's Del Norte, Humboldt, Trinity, Mendocino, and Sonoma counties we looked at the other day, just for reference.
And what's his complaint about the bill?
Well, he has a couple complaints. Number one is, and probably the most important, it's the only complaint really that matters because he started a couple other ones to look good to the public. He wants to actually limit the bill to people who make $40,000 a year or less, who can take the credit, and he wants to put a, it's not even going to be a credit anymore under his plan. It would be a 20% deduction, essentially, which is, I mean, it's a poison pill amendment. He wants nothing more than to kill the bill.
Right.
But the big reason he wants to kill the bill is because although this credit ramps up slowly, as we've seen in Arizona, people pick it up and they move the services over carefully and consistently. It's not a big shift all at once, and that helps the people who are reliant on some of these government services, allows them to switch over to the nonprofits. But at its outset, if it were to have the same impact as Arizona, this would taxpayers would probably direct about $312 million. To organizations in California. And the Senate chair is really concerned about that, not because, of course, that the government does a better job or that government provides all of these great services.
Or that it won't help people.
Or that it won't help people. No, none of that. It's not about the women and children. His number one concern is he will not have control of the purse strings and where the revenue goes.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, why would you limit this to people that make $40,000 or less? I mean, obviously, people that make more money have more money to donate or be charitable with. Why wouldn't you just open it up for anybody that wants to do it?
Well, he's desperately trying to reclaim the moral high ground that he's lost by opposing this bill.
Well, it's just
at the end of the day, that's what it is.
It's just politics.
I mean, if politics worked for the good of the people, I'd have a job in the marketing industry or something.
Sure.
I don't
there
know.
You go.
Well, it sounds like this could be a poison pill for his career.
Well, and we have to take a break. And just for some reason, last night at 11 o'clock, apparently I had a clairvoyant moment because I think that the song we're going to play next actually answers the question. So, in 30 seconds or less, we'll give you the answer here, and we'll be right back with our guest Dan Johnson.
Clenched in fists of rage, no angel born in hell could break that Satan's spell. And as the flames climb high, and...
All right, so we've determined it's about the money.
Oh, it's, I knew
and,
that.
And
would
you know
be...
the other part of it that we were talking about without you, Dan. I'm sorry, we left you unceremoniously on hold. But the other thing is too, you don't need bureaucrats to administer that if the money's going to a charity.
Yeah, and that's their big rub.
So, cuts back on how many government employees we need.
Well, it's not like we're in need of bureaucrats to do regulation either. You have
no, we have plenty. We're good. Yeah, this is
well,
yes, this is California.
You're also in California.
We're pretty much covered.
You have three regulations for every one that you need.
Seven people looking over your shoulder to make sure you complied. You know, it's interesting, though. This happens in – I mean, obviously it happens a lot. But the other example I can think of at the federal level is the CHOICE program for veterans benefits, the health benefits. So there's a – we put a program in, I don't know, three, 4 years ago now called Veterans Choice – which was originally literally a choice. Here is your card, Mr. or Mrs. Veteran. If you don't want to go to the VA, you can go to a private doctor. Then, of course, that was trimmed down, had a bunch of requirements and limits. But the VFW, American Legion, all these veterans organizations oppose the funding. It's coming again. It'll be up in the next, I think it runs out of funding in August or something, so the fight's coming. And the veterans organizations at the national level fight against choice, even though it benefits veterans all over the place, because if they can't get in to their local VA or they live really far away, it allows them to see a local provider. But they feel that it's a move toward privatizing the VA. And this is the very same thing. It's a move toward privatizing services to the public.
Well,
and why is that scary? I don't understand why that's so frightening.
I'll only disagree with that slightly, in that if We Do Better's bill passes in California tomorrow and not a single taxpayer takes advantage of it, nothing changes.
Correct.
All we're doing, we're not going to go in and force privatize anything. And I don't particularly like the word privatization for 15 million reasons, but I'll get to those eventually. What we're doing is we're saying, look, the people of California are only allowed to choose one method to take care of public services with their tax dollars.
Right.
That's it. One method. And it should be up to the people of the community. It should be up to the people of the state. It should be up to the individual where you want those dollars to go. And if everybody says, look, the government of California is the most efficient, least abusive, best operating machine in existence, and I want my tax dollars to go to them, go ahead. That's fine. That probably won't be the answer.
It's more like I'm too lazy to look up a charity to donate to, actually.
or you're too. And of course, there are solutions for that, too. You know, just a couple of years ago, in Flagstaff, Arizona, a group of charities, and the charities in Flagstaff, realized that this could be a huge boon for them, that they could get a lot of resources this way. And so they formed the Flagstaff Tax Credit Coalition. And then they realized that one of the advantages government had was it was a centralized place. You pay them, you write them one check, and then they distribute it out to whatever services, and you've done your civic duty, and you can go do whatever. So they created a portal where, imagine doing your taxes like this. You go to the portal, you click on donate. You type in your name and information, and then you check a box for each of the charities that you want your $400 to go to, and you hit submit. It takes 2 minutes. And they were able to raise, through the credit, about $1 million within
awesome.
By their fourth year. So.
See, and the other thing, too, with this idea, you know, people like ownership. You know, not necessarily physically owning, but I mean, they like to take ownership of their money, of their projects. And so this would obviously make people look at their community a little more, look at what services were available, and probably follow the charities that they donate, to through this program. I would imagine they keep better track of them, and they probably donate more money outside of that. I mean, I think actually they would all, that there would be more money coming in to help people than they have just by, you know, the confiscatory tax policy that we have in place.
Well, if you think about it, we have a place on our website, wedobetter.org, where we list the 8 fundamental flaws of government provision of public services. Basically, every time you ask the government to provide a service, it doesn't matter whether you want them provided or not. It could be the military. It could be planting trees in your backyard. If you ask the government to provide a service, these are the flaws that will come with it, just so you know. And one of those key flaws is it makes someone less likely to act on their compassion. So we came up with this brilliant system by which we take a bunch of people who have money to give, and then we make a bunch of people who need that money angry at those people, And then we pass laws making those people who have money give their money and have no control over it to the people who need it. And then the people who need it are like, well, this is abusive, and so we pass regulations to protect them. And the people who are giving it go, well, these guys are buying salmon at the grocery store, and so we pass regulations back and forth. You want to know how red tape gets created?
Mm-hmm.
It gets created in that tug of war between the very group of groups of people who need to be associating the absolute most. And taxation, the way we currently do taxes, is this system where, yes, it was a decent idea to begin with, and yes, I'm actually saying this on the radio, because taxes was invented by the ancient Sumerians for war. Basically, we're being attacked, and if people don't throw a few dollars in the pot, we're all going to die. At the time, probably made sense. But where we are today, with the organizations, with the associations, with what we have in society today, that system is perhaps the most important, the biggest system holding people down, holding their social mobility down, and pitting groups of people in society against each other who, frankly, need to be working together if we're going to address these problems and move forward as a nation.
Yeah, I would totally agree.
Well, I agree 100% with that. But I also think that our government has become so bloated that when you do pay your taxes and they do have a department of whatever to help a specific group of people, how much of that tax dollar goes towards administrating the department and how much of it actually goes towards actually helping the people it was meant to help?
Even if you made that incredibly efficient, so let's say you minimized that, right? And so your delivery was just amazing. The biggest difficulty, I think, the one I see the most, is that people are limited to a certain amount of money. And
right.
And so you're looking at like $800 to $900 a month, and if they make over that, then they lose. I mean, if they get a part-time job or whatever, then the government subsidy goes down, so they're trapped in this cycle of poverty that they can never get out of. It actually incentivizes, you know, what we used to joke about with the school thing, you know, the race to the bottom. And we have a lot of people trapped in that system, a ton.
Speaking of school, I have my hand up in the back. Ooh, pick me.
Dan, do you have something to add?
I might. So the Urban Institute, to the first point, the Urban Institute, which is not exactly a conservative think tank, the Urban Institute did a study about where the state TANF, temporary assistance for needy families, block grants are going. Where does the tax dollars that someone pays for basic cash assistance, where does that money go? How much can it really cost to pay a guy to sit in an air-conditioned room and write checks to people all day? Well, for every $10 that someone pays into the TANF system, on average, $2.46 actually ends up in the hands of the welfare recipient. It's a 75% overhead. And on average, we find that about 50 of that a federal agency, if they're operating really efficiently, spends about 50% of its revenue on administrative staff, salaries, benefits, etc., whereas a nonprofit on average spends about 30%, still less efficient than the private sector, but you're getting just about two times your bang for the buck. And a direct comparison is Crossroads, Michigan. Crossroads of Michigan actually has a welfare program. They have a basic cash assistance program, very similar to the federal government's program. But because they're actually about giving the cash to people and not about giving the cash to an employee to give the cash to people, their efficiency rate runs at about 90%. So $9 of every 10
And is that a program by the state of Michigan, or is it a private?
That is a private 501c3 privately funded nonprofit program.
I was like, it had the word Michigan in it, so it's either about the state or by the state.
Right.
Yeah.
Of course,
about the state would be the 90%.
The problem there is you don't have any control, or maybe it's not a problem. There's no control over how they spend that money. They can go out and buy cigarettes. They can buy booze. They can buy drugs. They can buy, if you're just giving them cash.
How does it work? What do they find over there?
So the nice thing, first of all, it's an integrated program. So they do give them the cash assistance, and they sometimes give them transportation assistance, like bus assistance and stuff like that as well.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all directed at getting them a job in the workforce.
Ah.
And the nice thing about a nonprofit, I'm not advocating that a nonprofit set up a national program and everybody jump on that program either. Nice thing about a nonprofit is their financial incentive is not to have people on that program, but their mission is to help them. So their goal is to get them off the program, have them temporary on the program for as long as they can, and then have them off the program into a job and back into the workforce. And they can do things like, guy comes in and goes, hey, I got a job. It makes just as much as you guys are giving me. But if you guys take away what you're giving me right now, like the federal government does automatically,
right?
If you guys take away what you're giving me right now, then all I'm relying on is this job, and if they, you know, decide to get rid of me or lay off or whatever, then I'm back to square one. Can I get half of it still? And the nonprofit can go, absolutely, yeah, you can. Whereas the federal government, there's just this automatic, if there's many jobs that people who are of lower income, who are in poverty, want to take. But if they take it, it'll cut their benefits down so much they can't do that to their family.
Yep.
And the flexibility of nonprofits, even for-profits, things like that, the flexibility of this world allows you to treat every individual as an individual instead of a minority and, you know, tough luck.
Well, and since it isn't administered at a national level, you can actually tailor things for community because the people in the community are working with other people in their community. Imagine that. Mm-hmm. Gee whiz, it's like the olden days, Dan. You've somehow stumbled on something from the olden days that used to actually work. Oh, my gosh. We have to take a really quick break. We'll be right back. Our guest is Dan Johnson. He is working on a project called the Charitable Credit. You can find it on our website at wethepeopleradio.us. Dan started the fire.
Yeah, he did. He lit it.
Oh, Dan, you little problem child.
So, Dan, I don't know. Maybe I missed that part, but SB 1485, what the way it's written right now, what is going to be the amount that people can donate?
Redirect.
Or redirect.
It would be $500, which is about the what the average, a quarter of what the average Californian pays in income tax.
Okay.
Okay, that's pretty good.
And are there a lot of other states doing this now other than Arizona?
So We Do Better is active in 12 states right now. Actually, these states, the campaign from the beginning is, look, when it comes to the economic side of things, the right is, the people who lean right, generally fairly easy to get on board with, except the Republicans in Congress, but they're a whole different story.
That is another set of problems, all just fraught with difficulty.
But when it comes to the left, they generally, you have to prove that you care first before they're even willing to listen to any of that. And so our strategy from the beginning has been to go to the progressives. We launched at Netroots Nation, which is the largest, it's basically the progressive CPAC. It's the largest progressive conference in the country. We launched there last year. And we've gotten tremendous support from them. And so our top three states that we're active in are actually California, Illinois, and New York.
That's confusing.
And we're also active in Georgia. We're active in Florida. We may have a bill dropping in Puerto Rico sometime soon because of the disaster relief work we did there. All of these opportunities are coming up. But at the end of the day, you know, we're just, I guess you could say, a catalyst. You know, we're saying, here's an idea, here's a concept, and here are the tools to implement this in your state. Here are the tools to say, you know what, if you're in California, to say, I'm going to call State Senator McGuire, and I'm going to call State Senator McGuire at 916-651-4002, and I'm going to say, hey, this is the type of legislation that represents the people of California. This is the type of legislation we need in California. Again, that number. Remember, I've been in politics a little while. That number, 916-651-4002, call Senator McGuire and say, you need to support this because the people of California support it.
And this is Senate Bill 1485. So it's the Universal Charitable Credit.
The California Universal Charitable Credit, absolutely, SB 1485, and obviously, and they can go to your website and get the information about the meeting in Sacramento on May 9th, I assume.
Yes.
It's refreshing to know that it's a bipartisan, the bipartisan response is good.
I mean, for the most part, except for what's-his-face on the coast, but the coast never seems to be, it's like a coastal problem. So look at what your, if you live in the state of California, check with your state senator and find out if they support this or not. Because, honestly, if you're not one of their constituents, they don't care what you think. So, make sure you call whoever it is that represents you. But if you know people who live in an area like the northern coastal counties, who else is big opposition? I was thinking, people have relatives and friends all over the place.
Big opposition is, as usual, going to be party leadership. They tend to be, they're the people who killed this in Idaho. This year. They're the people who are going. I mean, you're going to contrast this to what the party leadership in California presented. I don't remember the bill number, but about a month and a half ago or so, there was a bill introduced by Kevin De Leon. And it was the California Excellence Fund bill. I'm not sure how familiar you were if you pay attention to that. But the idea was, because Trump passed this Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, that people wouldn't be able to take the SALT deduction, the state and local tax deduction, over $10,000. They would be able to give the rest of that money to this California Excellence Fund and get a tax credit, very similar to our bill, except for limited to one charity, this brand-new California Excellence Fund. And they would get a deduction, and they'd be in the same place, essentially, as if they were taking the SALT deduction before. The fun little key about this California Excellence Fund is it is literally the definition of a fake charity.
I was going to say, who is the charity?
Yeah. Uh-oh, fake charity already?
It is a brand-new charity created by the legislature of California.
Oh, well, there you go.
Appropriated by the legislature of California. Mm. Regulated and controlled by the legislature of California.
Wow.
It is basically a renaming of the general fund to a charity.
Yeah.
It's like they installed a giant parking meter in your wallet. That's fantastic. You must be the meter.
I mean, at the end of the day, this is what the establishment politicians in California have presented. They've said that what we want to do is create fake charities that don't do any more good for the people and make us look good and make us have the revenue. What we're saying is there are real charities, like Saved in America, that are doing real work in
the
cities
and
counties, that have a track record in the state of California, and that you should be able to send your money to. And if you're outside the state of California, if you go to WeDoBetter.org and you say, hey, I want to lead an effort in my county for property taxes. I want to lead an effort in my city, in my state. I want to say, hey, the people should be empowered to do what they do best in my state. You go to WeDoBetter.org. We've got a crack team. We write the legislation. We've been involved in grassroots action. We know how to do this, and we're happy to train you. But at the end of the day, where this goes, who has a charitable credit in their state, is going to be completely up to the people and the organizations in that state to say, we do better, We know we do better. Not one day, not we can, not someday the free market will take over and we'll all sing kumbaya.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, today, with a track record, there are organizations, we'd like to support them, and frankly, we'd like to be able to direct our dollars away from abusive government agencies or agencies that aren't doing their best job. We'd like an accountability mechanism that exists directly in this charitable credit. And we'd like that in our state. You can go to wedobetter.org and sign up for your state there. I know I'm running out of time, but immediately after I testify, thankfully we were able to raise all of the money necessary. Thanks to the great people of California, we were able to raise all the money necessary to get me out there as an expert witness and to help rally people to the committee meeting. We're going to attempt to raise money now. I'm heading to the Liberators Conference in Northeast Ohio to speak to about 300 people, including Tea Party leaders and Republican legislators. And we need to raise about $400 for that. So if that's your cup of tea, if that's how you'd like to support the movement, you can go to wedobetter.org, click on donate, and do that. But at the end of the day, if there's one thing you take away from this broadcast, besides be there in California, it's not we can, not eventually, not when the politicians give us permission, but right now, today, we do better, and we should be able to take our resources and go do even better.
Exactly.
Hear, hear. See, and it can be done with, I mean, you're working with, what, 30 different people, you said?
Okay. Yeah, about 30 different organizations in Cali right now.
That's fantastic. And I don't know, you know, people say that people in their 20s are worthless. Now, of course, we all meet those people, but hey, I meet people in their 50s that are worthless too, so go figure. But at 24, you're a very nice example of what can be done when people put their mind to it. Dan?
Well, I guess that's a compliment, isn't it?
Well, we definitely appreciate your work on this and bringing this to light. And I just hope everybody gets on board with this SB 1485. At least get on there and take a look at it and see what it's about.
Yeah,
and put some pressure on your representatives to get this thing moving.
And I know a lot of people are Facebookers and Twitter users and stuff, and if you go to wethepeopleradio.us, all that is there, and it's linked, and you can just fire it off to friends, and the commercial-free archive of this will be up just a little bit later this afternoon. Thanks a million, Dan. We hope to chat with you more recently than, you know, this five-year gap, kind of weird. Shoot, if we do that again, you'll be like 30 years old. You'll be like an old man.
Well, thank you guys very much for having me on, and hopefully I can come back on and say we got it through committee and let's beat up some different politicians.
Please do.
There you
know
go.
What? Let us know.
All right. Awesome. All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Dan.
As our guest, Dan Johnson. We're coming back with Soraya Dean on a whole new topic. See you later. WeThePeopleRadio.us.